You are listening to Punk News Podcast 551, back from the edge again, continuing on for onward. This episode is posting a little bit late this week, but that's because Hallie Bullet demanded that we record later this week because she had something going on, which was no problem. I mean, it's Friday night, and I know that M was planning on jamming with Emperor at second basis, but that's all right. I mean, like, she's not going to get to do that because we have to do the podcast. So that's fine. And I know Sam actually, like, won some kind of contest where her and all five of NSYNC were going to go around, like, New York and sightsee and stuff. And even JT was going to be there. But that's right. She canceled that plan because, you know, Hallie had to have the podcast tonight. I actually had a double date with Scarlett Johansson and Selma Hayek. Well, I mean, it was a double date for me because I was going out with both of them, but they were just going out with me, so that was a single date for them. And I mean, it was scheduled to go, and I had to call. I'm like, sorry, Scarlett, I can't make it. I called up Selma. I said, lo siento, and she said to me, two solo TNAs, uno oportunidad con Selma Hayek. And I guess that means call me next week because my Spanish isn't so good. But, you know, we'll see. But that's all right. Listen, this is Hallie's world, and we just live in it. Except your podcast 551.
I always tell you guys when I can't do the podcast, you are screaming like, go on without me. I'm so happy now that you all had all these fabulous plans, and they were all ruined because of me.
Well, they're not ruined. NSYNC is still taking me out for chocolate tomorrow.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know.
Sam, who's better, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, or LFO? Who's the best?
Oh, my God. Don't even get me started. NSYNC, my heart forever and ever and ever. And I'm so sad that I never got to see them ever. I was actually, like, watching something on MTV because they were doing, like, some weird TV show about, like, these weird bands and MTV, and I was literally crying as they were doing the NSYNC episode. I was just like, oh my God. Yeah.
Dude, I don't even want to tell you. Now I just have to. I don't want to. NSYNC saw me perform, man. The NSYNC came to rent when I was in it. All that spiky blonde hair was all out there in the audience, and we got to meet them afterwards, and they were super nice.
You need to post that photo if you have a photo, because I would
didn't
literally
take a
be
photo
like,
because I didn't care about NSYNC. I'm so sorry.
Oh my God. Well, anyways, my heart is broken like forever now, but it's okay. I'll just go get chocolate with them tomorrow.
Yeah, your heart will not be broken when you're at Jacques Torres or we're at a Max Brenner. Where are you gonna go? Where are you gonna go to have chocolate with them?
Yeah, I'll find a place. There's tons of New York places that they can go to.
Well, it looks like NSYNC was the decisive winner of our NSYNC Backstreet Boys LFO battle. So there you have it, listeners. Welcome to the Punknews Podcast, where we talk about all things punk. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. We got a lot of mail about episode 550, but we're not going to do that this week because we haven't done news in like 2 or 3 weeks. So we're going to do we're just going to hit the news stories this week, and then next week we'll get up with the mail. Also, I'm not going to plug every week, but Architects of Self-Destruction, the podcast is up. People are digging it right now. There's Dick Lucas and Aura of the Slackers. Next week is Mikey Erg of 1,000 Bands talking about his time at SFH. Meanwhile, the book's coming out August 10, Architects of Self-Destruction. Get that at Rare Bird Lit. Also, the book release show September 20 in LA at Alex's Bar. If you want to go, make sure you get tickets because it is definitely will sell out. We got a lot of special things planned and it's going to rule. So come check that out. And let's hit the news. Well, also, we're here with M. M, what's happening?
Hello. We found mutant ants today. They created a tunnel trying to get into the house and it wasn't there yesterday. So that's done in like 2 hours.
We also with Sam Barrett. Sam Barrett, any ant problems today?
No ant problems, but how did you get rid of them?
We sprayed a bunch of stuff on them. So, like, we're just going to see what happens right now.
Wait, how big are these ants and how big was the tunnel? And where was the tunnel leading? Like, what part of your house were they trying to get into?
It was, like, right by the front. So they're trying to get in by the front. Oh, my God. They're so small, but there's, like, so many of them. Aww. And the tunnel took away a good chunk of dirt between, like, stepping stones.
They were trying to get on the podcast, man.
I know.
and we're also here with Hallie Bullet. Hallie Bullet and Extermination. A sad but necessary thing to defend your home, or a needlessly cruel device as espoused by the Dalai Lama.
Oh, God. I really, you're teasing me, but I really do have, like, such, like, angst over killing bugs. I don't like to kill bugs. We currently have a giant spider web in our kitchen, and I just, like, I can't catch this spider, and I feel so bad destroying her web, and so I just keep letting it go on, like, it looks like we live in a haunted house. Like, she has taken up, like, a whole part of our window, and I've now gotten this device. That it's so awesome. Everyone needs to get this. It's this incredible device that's, like, a little box with, like, a magnifying glass on the top of it, and if you can get, like, it's like a box with no bottom on it. And if you can get the box over the bug, then it has this little, like, compartment. It has, like, this little floor that slides out. Can you guys picture what I'm talking about? Like, yeah. It's like the cup and paper trick, but this is, like, more like an official device for catching bugs. And it has a magnifying glass on the top, so if you do successfully catch it, you then get to, like, look at it for a little while before you go, like, set it free outside. So that's what I generally try to do, but yeah, sometimes you have to call the exterminator, and that really makes me sad.
Well, I was just thinking that you were getting a head start on Halloween decorations.
No, we're fully ready for this spider has us ready for Halloween right now.
Okay, well, listen, let's talk about some news. The Linda Lindas, they're back again. They signed to Epitaph Records recently, and a lot of people are psyched. They released a video for a song called Oh, it's off their They released an EP in 2020. This single appears to be standalone right now, but it might be a part of some upcoming LP or EP. The Linda Lindas, there was the question when they first debuted. I mean, they're a bunch of, like, I don't know, like 14-year-old young women, I'd say. And the thing was, they were very young, but very punk, and also very against racism, which a lot of people thought was cool, and I thought was cool. And so the question is, though, is this kind of a, you know, buzzy kind of kiddie group, or is this like a legit band with a legit point to make? The video is cool, and it's out, and I don't know, and more. The Linda Lindas, here to stay or gone next week?
I think they're going to stay. I think they're going to stick around. Because I kind of feel in situations like this where it's like they had music out and then they got a lot of recognition and then they were signed. I feel like there's more like pressure for them to be like, hey, you know, like put out lots of content and lots of really good content. So I think there's going to be like more stuff coming around, like coming out. And I think they want to stay, so that's what they will do. I thought the song was really cool. Like, I thought it was really, really, really catchy. Like, really catchy. It was, like, going through my head and stuff. I liked the video. The video was cool with, like, all the Polaroids and stuff. Very colorful, and I thought it matched the song pretty well. Like, just with the energy levels and stuff. So, yeah, I wonder, like, what they're going to do next, like if they are going to put out another EP or if they're going to put out another full length. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens and where they go from here, for sure.
Sam Barrett, the Linda Lindas, where do you stand?
I love them. I think they're here to stay. I personally need them. Because they are Asian representation and, you know, a Latinx representation. I feel that we need a lot more of that in the scene, in the punk hardcore sphere. We need more, you know, chicks in things. So I'm all for this still. And I think the song is super, super catchy. I really, really love this video. Like the Polaroid thing is great. It's very now, I think, because, you know, my little sister's running around with the Insta snacks and taking all these like weird little photos all over the place, like, you know, artsy fartsy stuff. So, yeah, like I really think that they want this, and they if people like me is listening and we need this, then they will continue, hopefully.
I think this song is it's super good. I think it's funny that you both use the word catchy, because that's like, I just wanted to, it's so catchy, right? Like, it's undeniably catchy. I think it's like definitely like borrowing pretty heavily from like Sleater-Kinney, but I kind of have no problem with that. It still does freak me out a little bit, just how much money is obviously going into like this band of like children and teenagers. Like, there's something weird to me about it, but they just like, they continually like have the songs and the performance chops to like mostly just shut me up about that. You know, I'm just like, they're talented. They're super fun to watch. Like, I really liked this. I really liked this song. John, were you into this?
I gave the song the Alice Bag test, and I closed my eyes. I'm like, what if whatever band was not doing this, but it was Alex Bag? Would I say it was cool? And the answer is yes. I actually thought the song was very cool.
Yeah.
It could have been an Alice Bag song, essentially, except for, honestly, the only thing I didn't like, well, I didn't like, I liked it a lot. I think the song is great. I think the young women seem pretty cool. I think they got charisma. I think that's all cool. I just thought it was a little overproduced, which is just my own. Like, I didn't think the O needed to be kind of that, like, Le Tigre O, you know, TKO O, you know, like, for Tigre, it's cool because it's kind of, like, super produced. I thought this one actually might sound better, a little bit more raw. But, I mean, that's just such a tiny bone to pick, really, you know. The other thing is I like the video, but you can tell they're choreographed. They're doing moves that like experienced punkers do that they learned from quite literally Johnny Rotten and HR, you know. So were they taught these moves, or did someone tell them to do these moves? And even if someone did, it's not the worst thing in the world. I still think it's cool. You know, there is no perfect reality. And if someone coaching this band to a degree is what it takes to get a band like this beyond, you know, terrible, oh, my girlfriend dumped me band, or faux political bands that act like they're political, but all they really want to do is drink beer and talk about old punk bands that no one cares about. Well, I shouldn't say that. Talk about old punk bands that, you know, are kind of old, that aren't really doing anything. You know, I'll take this over that. That being said, I agree with Hallie. I am curious about what's going on behind the scenes. But that being said, they're walking the like if we look at the band, The Regrets, and actually we're going to talk about this concept a lot more later on tonight's show. The Regrets, you could definitely tell there was money behind the scenes, and that songs probably were being written for the band, and that they definitely had vocal coaches and so forth. The final product wasn't quite good enough for you, allowed you to ignore that. Here, this song is like really good. So for the time being, the song is so good, I'm willing to ignore it, you know, just because the song is so good, you know. But so I have hopes for Linda Lindas. I think the song is cool. I guess just time will tell. What it is, I hate being manipulated, and I hate it when there's big bucks in the background, and there's like, I don't care if a major label is putting out a record. Chumbawamba's on a major label, and that's fine. Everyone knows a major label, you know, financed, I get knocked down. So they're not hiding anything, so that's fine. But when it's hidden, I just get annoyed, and that's not the Linda Lindas' fault, you know. There's just something seems off there, you know. But that being said, this song is very cool. And I like everything I've heard from the Linda Lindas, so I think they're cool. I guess the question is, do they need that ghostly backing, if it even exists? Or are we all just paranoid? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. But you're right. The TKO thing is like spot on. In fact, like Ray, it's more like Le Tigre than Sleater-Kinney. But it's like it is like I don't mind a band of like young women hearkening back to that, like, that, you know, that like late 90s, early aughts era of like cool women music. And I like when the one does like the push-ups at the end. they seem super cool. But I think, John, you and I are like we're both like having the same like like, right, you know what I mean? It's like I'm into it, I'm liking, but like, I think we're saying the same thing. There's just like something where it is just like it's a little slick for, you know, a band that I feel like the charm is supposed to be that they're young. And like, to me, it's almost a shame for it to be so polished so quickly. It's like, let them just be like a messy group of kids, you know, they're kids. I'm not patronizing. They are literally kids, you know. There's something about it being so like so overly styled, and you know, it's there's something there, but they're great. They're great. And I think you're right. I think you're, it's like, it is, a, the, it's things like that, that will just get more people's eyes on them. And if that's the case, then like kind of so be it, you know?
It's a good song. It seems like you're having fun. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So listen, we'll see. So as of right now, I am two thumbs up for the Linda Lindas, and time will tell, you know, not that my opinion even matters. Cause like this band, like, isn't even really supposed to be important. Well, actually that's a whole other question. Isn't it? I don't want to get too deep into this, but should John care about the Linda Lindas? Is it important if John cares about the Linda Lindas? You know what I mean?
Like, do you mean in terms of like the music, or just like, are you saying like, because I feel like we say this on the podcast a lot, like, are you saying that just maybe you're not the audience for this, or like, what exactly is your angle on that?
It appears, if we take it at face value, that the point, one of the points of the Linda Lindas is to get young people excited and into punk and thinking, thinking creatively, but thinking, what do you call it when you look at something and try to figure out what it means? What the hell's, I'm so
interpreting?
Stupid. No, I think when you question things, critically. Thinking, I feel like the word critic, even though I'm a music critic, hypothetically. thinking critically. And so if it's either this or some stupid, well, I don't say stupid, because some mindless pop song, like the Linda Lindas aren't going to change John's life. You know what I mean? The Linda Lindas might change a 14-year-old's life. You know?
Fuck yeah.
So does it matter that what I think about them? Maybe not. You know?
Yeah.
You know? So anyways, but I still think they're cool right now. Anyways, here's someone named John Lars Fredericks. He's putting out another solo EP. Actually, he's putting out his first solo EP, but it's going to be out later this year. He said on Instagram, shooting a video for my solo EP today and want to give a big shout out to the people for giving him free stuff. All right, whatever. Lauren's got free stuff on the internet. All right. So and honestly, the Punk News commenters went crazy. The Punk News commenters are super excited about the new Lars EP. And the question is, you know, Rancid has been very hit or miss since Indestructible. What's in that album? Invincible? Indestructible? I'm losing my mind. Fall Back Down? What was the name of that album?
Are you loopy again?
I must be drunk. Indestructible. So Rancid has been very hit or miss since Indestructible, and sometimes they hit and a lot of times they miss. My criticism has been, you know what, if Tim just took Tim's best tracks and Lars just took Lars' best tracks from Old Firm Casuals and from his solo stuff and from his other band, not Dexy's Midnight Runners, but the band Oxley's Midnight Runners, and if Matt took his one best track and they put it all together, they'd have a great Rancid album. But instead, they spread it all out and we get a bunch of okay releases and some bad stuff. And that suggests they don't really get along, because if they really want to contribute to the gang, they would. Instead, it seems like they're saving their best stuff for themselves. So the question is the Rancid party over? Should we even care about a Lars solo EP? Or should Lars be commended? Rancid heyday is over, hypothetically speaking, but he's still putting out punk, just like Charlie Harper of the UK Subs is putting out records still. Like, honestly, like, no UK UK Subs record is going to change the world, but Charlie just putting it out because he likes doing punk and playing punk shows, so that should be commended. What category should we place Lars? And why do I have such a bone with Rancid? Well, I know why I have such a bone with Rancid, but anyways, that's where we're at. Hallie Bullet. Where are we at with Lars?
I can't even talk about that. I really believed that the focus of this conversation was going to be about how he said, mentioned his EP and then immediately said in the same sentence, and want to give a big shout out to the people over at Real Hoxton for the button down and the jacket. exclamation point. And then the picture of him, he looks miserable. He's giving the most half-hearted thumbs up. He looks like a kid that was just told he has to thank grandma for the Christmas sweater that he got that he does not like. Like, he looks, I mean, this is a sad post. Like, I really don't care about the music at all. I just thought we were going to talk about how sad this post is. And I also can't believe that none of the Punk News commenters really seemed to like think this was like sort of like, and I like Lars, I'm not trying to like hate on Lars, but this is an absolutely pitiful post. It's terrible. I don't know, that's all I have to say about it. Who cares about the music? I'm just like, you. thanks for the button down and the jacket with all these exclamation points. And then his face is like, his face like is like negative exclamation points, like his expression. Whew, okay. All right. Someone else talk about the music.
I can't even with this. Like, I saw the post and I was like, oh, okay. And I'm like, oh, a solo EP. An EP? That's it? I was like, oh, okay, sure. But Rancid, they're doing tours with Dropkick Murphys, which is, I think, a thing that they do all the time. And I'm like, what are you going to do? Like, play Ruby Soho like 50 million times? I was like, you know, at this point, I think they should probably work on something together, maybe. So John might have a point with that. This is bad that I'm on John's wagon right now, but that's, yeah.
Are you anti-me, Sam? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not anti you. I'm just saying that.
You're just saying you don't like agreeing with anything he says.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I do think that you have a point. I was like, you know, the fact that all of these people are putting out like solo thingies and then, you know, if I was a Rancid fan, which I don't hate or care really about Rancid so much, I do understand why Rancid is a thing. But if I was a Rancid fan, I would want to hear new music. Why don't they just give people what they want? I don't know. Anyways, I don't.
The only answer is because they hate each other more than they like their fans, which isn't necessarily true. But that's kind of what the evidence suggests. Like, if the fans want Rancid and you guys get along and you make lots of money, then let's do some Rancid, you know, but they choose not to. Like, listen, say what you will about Dave Grohl, which I have. Foo Fighters are like, you know, people want more bland 90s rock. Let's make lots of money and do it. And they do, and the fans love it, and they sell out. But Rancid, like, seems to not want to do that, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see. We'll see how tour does.
And more. How excited are you about the new Lars EP? And
how excited are you about the button down?
I'm as thrilled as he looks in the picture. I'm sorry.
I gotta say, man. Well, I could dog on Lars on something, but I won't. But, you know, I don't know. Man. I don't know if Rancid deserves the beating they get or not. I mean, yeah, I mean, I do dog on Rancid a lot, but I mean, the classic era records really are great, and the first Lars solo record is really good. The second one is not good, and the insert's even worse. Yeah, you guys have seen the insert of the second Lars record, right?
That's no. The Viking one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, no, I haven't seen it. Just fill me in quickly.
It's Lars with like eight naked women, and like he's like standing like giving the thumbs up, and like all these naked women are like clawing at him like he's like the hottest guy ever, you know.
It's awful.
It is like, oh my god.
Yeah, that sounds embarrassing.
No. Every time I see him, that's what I think. So it's just kind of like, ugh.
And honestly, like maybe which is an artistic misstep, and everybody's entitled to an artistic misstep, but it's like your whole thing is equality, unity, but not for women. You know, they're objects. You know what I mean? So I don't know, you know. Of course, when Danzig does it, it doesn't bother me, but I guess that's not Danzig's thing. Danzig's thing is I'm from hell and I love having sex with strippers. You know, so it's a different message. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man. Here's something I do love. I'm being a hater this week. The Jackass trailer. The new Jackass movie's coming out. It's going to be called Jackass Forever, which I guess is technically the fourth of the straight-up Jackass movies, although there's lots of spin-offs. The angle of the movie, and you can see the trailer at Punk News, is the angle is that they're all older now, but they're still getting together for one last Jackass adventure. The Minutemen's Corona is still the theme song, and I'll kick it off. I don't even know really why. I mean, I'm not a huge Jackass fan, but I definitely like the movies a lot and the show. Some of it is too much for me, and some of it's too lowbrow for me, but sometimes it just, you know, seeing the guy going down a hill in a shopping cart, you know, is really funny sometimes. And so I'm really excited for this. It just seems I don't think it's going to be as intense as Jackass. I guess 2 was the craziest one. It definitely seems like it's a little bit less risky this time, which is fine. You know, I don't want to see anybody die, you know. But I'm excited for random wackiness that here's why I'm excited for this. Right? You know, everything's political now, which maybe that's a good thing. Everything's a social commentary, which maybe is a good thing. But you know what? Maybe I just want some random wackiness that has no bigger point except for here's a bunch of dumbasses that are doing dumbass things, but the joke's on you because they're all way richer than you are. But I want to see it. I want to see it. And more. Jackass, what do you think?
I've never watched a full one. I've just seen, like, clips and stuff. So, like, of what I've seen, like, it's either really funny or really stupid. With this, too, it was, like, it opens and then it's, like, the guy gets the crocodile, like, right on his nipple, like, and that's the first, like, scene, and that just killed me, and I don't know why, it's just, like, this is the best, so, it was really funny, and I don't remember which one it was, but one of them, they had a Shark Week special, where they, like, swam with sharks, and one of them got bit and had to get, like, hauled out of the water and go to the hospital and stuff, so it's, like, it's nuts that there's still doing this, like, when they're are they 50 or
yeah, just they, about 50. They say that just Johnny Knoxville's about to turn 50. Yeah,
right. Oh yeah, the concussion thing gets flipped by the bull. Yeah, so, like, it's amazing they're still, like, doing this stuff at their age. I think that's again, it's either really good or really stupid, and they must be, like, good friends. Or yeah, the thing too in the story, that the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals put out a statement saying, "Hey, can you pull the animal scenes?" That was something too. It was like, oh yeah, they have the crocodile, the snake, and the bear, I think. And I don't really know.
If the listeners have the bear thing is crazy.
That, like, is like, so crazy. They put honey on a guy's head and salmon at his crotch, and they chain him to a chair, and then they let a bear walk in.
Like, oh, a legit, God, that was, like, grizzly bear. Like, grizzly, that's messed bear. Up.
It was like, yeah, it was pretty. That, I don't know why that made me laugh, because I really am an animal rights activist, but it was something about the fact that it was honey and salmon. Like, it was like evil Winnie the Pooh that was, like, going to come down.
Like, I thought that was funny, but, like, that's cruel on both ends, because it's cruel to the bear, because yeah. What if the bear really does go crazy? They might have to shoot it or something, you know what I mean?
What if the bear really does want honey and salmon?
Or what if it does go crazy and the guy, like, gets ripped in half? Like, it's cruel to both people in the thing. You know what I mean?
Well, I think the bear was chained. I saw a chain on that bear.
Yeah, like, maybe it couldn't actually reach the guy.
Yeah, like, so don't even – I don't even know what's going on with that. The clip just gave me so many questions. I was like, what's going on with the bear?
Honestly, things can always go wrong. I mean, that's pretty extreme. Ask those two guys with the tigers. What was it? Siegfried and Roy. Things can always go bad, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I do think, like, we're definitely all, like – due for just some dumb, like, stupid fun. Like, everyone's just, like, ready for that. Parts of this did make me giggle. I guarantee you I will never watch this. I, like, don't I will never watch it. Like, I can't watch people getting hurt, you guys. Like, I can't, even if it's supposed to be funny, and even if it's, like, they volunteered for it, like, I just, like, cannot watch. Like, I once heard this thing that, like, when they interview people that do, like, super heroic things, like people that, like, jump onto a subway track to, like, save someone that fell, or, like, people, you know, people who are real heroes, like, people who in a moment's notice, like, just make a split decision to put themselves in harm's way to try to help someone else. It's they did this study where they, like, examined the brains of some people that have, like, done that, and they're actually less, they're, like, sort of, they have less empathy than your average person. And that is actually what allows them to make really selfless decisions, because they're, like, seeing the person on the subway track, and their brain is not the kind of brain that immediately imagines themselves on the subway track and themselves getting hit by a train and how much that will hurt and how much that will suck. Like, they just kind of don't put themselves in that position, or like, does that make sense how I'm explaining that? But like, I would say I am overly empathic. I will never be a hero. I will, I like see people getting hurt, and I just like, I actually feel like I totally, like, I feel like their pain, and it drives me crazy, and I can't do it. So I'll never watch this. I don't know. Sam, are you a Jackass fan?
So when Jackass came out, like the original one, I was like a teenager. So of course I watched 1 and 2 because, you know, I'm a dumb teenager. I have not watched any Jackass related anything.
And Jackass is so funny.
Yeah, like, and the longest, I actually don't really watch movies, which is, like, crazy for some people. When I tell them I don't watch old movies, I'm always at a show. But, yeah, so I probably will not watch this. I'm also on your train where I don't even, like, I don't want to see, like, bad things happen. Like, to people, I was like, literally one time I was walking to the train station, the subway in Brooklyn, to go to work, and I literally saw, and this was like an elevated subway station, I was literally saw someone try to commit suicide, and I turned around and walked the other way because I was like, I can't see this. I just can't see this. So I spent the next 20 minutes walking to the next subway, the next station, and I texted my boss. I was like, I'm probably going to be late. I'll tell you later what happened.
I'm totally with you. I'm too emotional. I can't do it. I can't go there.
Yeah, like I can't deal with it. Just me dealing with just the visual of some guy trying to commit suicide was enough for me to say, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. Oh, I think if I actually made it to like the train station and actually saw him like larger, I think I would have freaked out and probably went home.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not watching Jackass.
Well, I definitely will be seeing Steve-O get his nuts hit by a parking meter, and I can't wait to see it. two things. Johnny Knoxville now proudly showing his gray hair. Should he dye his hair black to what he used to be to defy the ravages of age? Or is it commendable that he's accepting that he is now gray hair and is moving into the next stage of life?
It's commendable, but he does look kind of like Max Headroom.
He looks weird with gray hair for some reason. Like, he really does look weird with, you know. Second thing is, so everyone knows Jackass what really was composed of two units, the West Coast and the East Coast. Guess who went to the high school where all the East Coast Jackass guys were from?
Is that you?
Me!
Oh, my God.
During the story episode, I talked about my friend Duncan and I. Do you guys want to hear the very quick story about how Duncan and I almost got in a fist fight with Bam Margera and the whole East Coast Jackass crew?
Yes.
So circa 2007, Duncan and I used to go to weekly trivia night at Iron Hill Brewery in Westchester. It wasn't Kill Days. I think it was Iron Hill. No, it wasn't Iron Hill. It was the other one. Not Iron Hill, not Kill Days, but the one near Kill Days, like one block up.
Wait, are you talking about Westchester, New York?
No, Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And so we go up there, we go up there like every week. It's like every Tuesday or Wednesday or something. And there's like no one in there, and I'm looking on the TV, and it's the Bam Margera show, which was made after Jackass, where like Bam Margera gets married. And I say to Duncan, I can't stand Bam Margera. I can't stand him. If I ever see him, I'm going to throw him out the window. You see that window, Duncan? I'm going to throw him out the window. And Duncan's doing the thing like with his shifty eyes. I'm like, what are you doing that for? I can't stand Bam Margera. And he keeps doing this. I'm like, what do you like Bam Margera? He's terrible. He's the only guy in Jackass where he likes punishing people, but people do stuff to him, he gets mad. He's the worst sport of the crew. I can't stand him. I'm throwing him out the window. And then Duncan like goes, I turn around, and what it is, it's Bam Margera and his new wife and the rest of the East Coast Jackass crew, like there for like the debut show of Jackass. I mean, not Jackass, of the Bam Margera show, like season 2. And apparently they like rented out the bar, and Duncan actually like walked in because we didn't like read any signs. And so, well, we bamboozed across the street. And then, I mean, listen, I'm not happy about bumming out Bam Margera, but he was kind of the dick. He then came, presumably after the show was over, he runs out to his Lambo and just does a total burnout on the one-way street in Westchester, down the street going 70 miles an hour, at like a 25-mile-an-hour street. It's like, whatever, Bam Margera, whatever. Anyways, I'm excited for the Jackass movie. Here's something that I'm not thrilled about, and here's another guy that I beat on a lot. Maybe I beat on him too much, or maybe I beat him on him the right amount of times. Henry Rollins, he's in a new Converse commercial. The Converse commercial stars him, Vince Staples, Tim Meadows, and a whole bunch of other people, and it was directed by Tyler, the Creator. And the thing of the Converse commercial is it's the really cool Converse club, and the leader of the really cool Converse club is reprimanding Tim Meadows for not wearing Converses all the time, because the rule of the really cool Converse club is the only shoe that you can wear is Converses. And Tim Meadows gets kicked out of the club because he was wearing not Converses. And Henry Rollins also votes to kick him out of the club because he's not wearing Converse sneakers prior. And also because he's wearing a denim hat. So it's very typically odd, as is Tyler, the Creator's style, which I enjoyed. But I had deep thoughts on this. But who wants to kick it off?
Wait, I want to know what your deep thoughts
are.
I thought it was super funny. That's like really all. I legit thought it was funny. If you're going to sell something, do it like this. Don't be like, thanks for the button down. Like make something funny. If you're going to like sell somebody's shit, like for money, or you're promoting someone's shit, like have it be something creative and funny like this. But wait, what are your deep thoughts, John?
Hallie Blunt, thank you for underscoring my point 100%. If you're going to sell something. And I'm still bitter about. I don't even think the other guys are bitter about this. When Flag first rose, everyone's like, "Oh, I'm excited to see Flag. It's going to be great." Keith Morris, Chuck Dukowski, Bill Stevenson, Des Cadena, and Stephen Egerton. Everyone was super excited. And one guy said, "Well, I don't want to be out there doing 30-year-old songs as a grown person." You know, Henry Rollins was. In a very Washington D.C. passive aggressive style, slightly dinging on Flag, saying, "Well, you know, I'm not into it," or, "You know, you won't find me doing old songs on stage." And he did an interview in Australia where he straight up slagged on Flag, which really annoyed me. It's like when Black Flag wasn't popular, and when Keith Morris was managing the Black Flag Facebook, when everyone would say, "You know, Henry's the worst singer," Keith Morris would go on and say, "No, Henry's cool. Henry's my friend. Henry's a great singer. They're all great singers in Black Flag. Henry's cool." Keith Morris defended Henry. When Henry wanted to raise money for the West Memphis 3, he said, "I want to do Black Flag songs live, and then I'm going to diss people doing Black Flag songs in 10 years, but not now. But I want to do them right now. Keith Morris, will you come?" Keith Morris went along with him and was a big part of the draw. It was Keith Morris doing Black Flag songs for the first time in a long, long time. When Flag came along, you know, Henry's like, "Well, I think that's a lame way to make money, you know, doing old songs." But it's not lame to make money if you sell shoes made in sweatshops owned by a gigantic corporation. That's a good way to make money. No, it's bad to make money off art that you create that you're entitled to that makes people happy and is moving art. But it's good to make money off shoes made in sweatshops by a gigantic corporation. That's Henry's logic. And if Henry didn't say that thing, I'd say this is cool and funny. You know, he's doing his thing. But he was so high and mighty about banging on Flag after Keith Morris had supported him and after he himself had done Black Flag songs live, you know, and also told all these old stories about him, Ian working at the ice cream shop for the 175th time at his shows where he had to pay money to get into. No, that's lame, but him selling sneakers is fine. And that's why I think it's lame. And I think he's a hypocrite.
You're so mad about that. And I get that. I don't think it's not. He wasn't criticizing anybody for like selling anything, right? He just said he didn't want to do the old songs, which I get why that pisses you off.
But he said he thought it was lame that they were doing it.
Right, but it doesn't. But he didn't like criticize them for doing a commercial or trying to sell anything. I mean, you know what I mean? At that, then I think it would be more hypocrisy. I'm just saying I don't think they're totally the same. I don't think that the thing that he criticized them for is the same as what he's doing here. Do you know what I'm saying?
You can still
just think the guy's like a jackass, and I think a lot of people would agree with you. But like, I don't know that those things are related. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think he's criticizing Flag for jaywalking while he was doing 173 in a school zone. That's my point.
In terms of, like, things that just, like, aren't punk. Okay, okay, all right, I get you.
It's not the same thing, and that if Flag made a misstep by playing their old songs live that they wrote live, that they performed live, that they never made money off of, if that was a misstep, which I certainly don't think it was, then it's a little misstep. But then totally shelling out for a giant corporation that makes shoes and sweatshops, like, that's so much worse. Both are hypothetically selling out, but one is selling out to yourself and one is selling out to someone else for more money for a gigantic corporation that makes money off sweatshops. Yeah, mm-hmm. I just don't see the I think what Henry does is way worse. And I wouldn't be so hard on him if he wasn't, you know, hard on Flag. Everyone makes compromises in their life all the time. But if you're going to be high and mighty, then you have to walk the walk, which I don't think Henry does at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's your point.
And more.
Who else is weighing in on Rollins?
All right. No one. No one's talking about Henry. All right. Let's play a song. Who's going to play a song? Sam Barrett, play a song.
Sure. Okay. So my song tonight is from this band called Koyo. They're from Long Island, New York. They just released an EP. Yeah, an EP called Drive Out East. So this is More Riches.
Story. The first Ramones record is going to be shot up into space by an Italian punk rock festival. The festival is called Punk Rock Reduno. It's next July 2022. And on the first day or the second day of the festival, they're going to take the first Ramones record, put it in a little rocket, and shoot it up into the upper atmosphere. It's going to hang up there for about 20 minutes, and then it's going to fall back down to Earth. You can actually like buy postcards and stuff to go up in the rocket and then come back down. CJ Ramone is playing the festival, and he posted about this, and he thought it was a cool idea. A lot of people had mixed thoughts. A lot of people were like, oh, that's kind of cool to send Ramone's record into space. And other people were like, well, what's the point? It's going to come back down in 20 minutes. Sam Barrett, wacky fun or a stupid idea that people should feel bad about?
I think this is stupid. I don't understand why you would want to shoot something up into space for like a few seconds and then for it to come back down. Like, it would totally be a different, like, you know, thing if, like, you know, people were going up there and they were only playing the Ramones album, and they were like, you know, taking breathtaking views of, you know, our planet or something like that, and they're sharing that, then sure. But yeah, no, I don't really understand why. When I was like looking up the punk festival, I was like, I couldn't even really figure out what the heck was going on there. I was like, oh, it's a festival. Great.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to figure out exactly what they're doing. It's almost like a Ponzi scheme. They're like, well, it's a festival, but it's a label, but it's a group of people, but we're shooting rockets.
I just could not figure out what the heck was going on. I was like, okay, where does this rocket come from? Like, how are you getting this rocket? Like, I have so many questions about this rocket. It's like, are you taking like physical record and shooting it up there? Are you taking a CD? Like, all of these things matter to me, apparently. If they are actually going to get something like this done in a rocket, right? And if people felt like they wanted to post a message to go into space, sure, they can spend money and post things like, you know, I buy stupid records with my dog's face on it. They can do things like that too. So, I don't know. This confuses me. I'm really confused today.
I did love that record, Sam. That was amazing.
Yeah, I'm so happy I have it. My dog is really adorable and evil at the same time. So, you know, I'm all okay. I'm like I told John this on another podcast. I was like, I'm all for anybody wanting to put my dog on a record. I'll pay it. I'm okay with that.
Exactly, but I think to John's point, it's just like there are things that go in the category of like wacky fun, right? Like there is no why. Like you do it because it's like it's funny and it brings you joy. Like I think for these punks / Ponzi schemers, this is bringing them. This is just giving them a giggle to be like, this is we love this record. This is like the be all end all record to us. And we want to shoot it into space. I think that's very funny. As a songwriter, I will say I would be way more excited. Like, and I didn't feel like this was part of it. I would be way more excited at the idea of my songs playing in space. Like just the actual like physical thing, just like laying there silently, like but the idea of like one of my songs actually is like playing in space, like that would blow my mind. So that I wish that's what they were doing. But this is a very cool tool. Unless I'm misunderstanding, unless playing the music is somehow going to be part of it, but it didn't seem like it.
It is not. They're playing modern press of the record in a capsule and shooting it on up.
It's still, come on, it's wacky fun. And more, what's your take on wacky fun?
All for
Are you pro wacky fun or con wacky fun?
Very, very pro. Yeah. I had two things with this. So the first thing, for some reason, I thought they were just like shooting it up there and just kind of releasing it and everything. So then I had this whole like tangent and stuff about like space aliens and if, you know, if they exist, if they had a punk scene and if this would like, you know, be the catalyst for a punk scene and what they think of it and, you know, like all this kind of stuff. And then it was like, oh yeah, it's just going to like, you know, do like what Jeff Bezos did and just go like woo and come back. And it's like, it seems kind of like, well, what are they going to do with it? Like, are they just going to be like, look, do you want to buy the Ramones record that was in space? It's $1 million. Like, are they really going to do something like that? And it's just even more of a money grab and feeding into the scheme. Yeah. But
you're on something. You're on something. This is going to be Discogs gold.
See? Wouldn't you kind of want to own a Ramones record that was in space? I mean, come on. It is kind of cool. There's something about it that's funny to me. Funny and cool. I don't know.
Well, at first I'm like, this is stupid. You know, it's like, it's not even in space. It's only up there for 20 minutes. But I'm like, you know what? It's wacky fun. You know, that's cool. It's an amusing thing. It's helped getting money for the festival. But then I'm like, well, if they really wanted to get money for the festival, why did they do some kind of charity that benefits another charity? And then I'm like, dude, when did you start becoming so heavy duty? You are the wacky fun guy. Have you ever been to a punk news show? Like, You know, we give out, like, hula hoops and shit, man. Like you, instead of spending a dollar for a hula hoop, you could get at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia if you really wanted to be some martyr, you know, Florence Nightingale. So this is wacky fun. They're having fun. I want a Ramones record that's been in space. Thumbs up. I will pay $30 for a Ramones record that's been in space. Someone else wants to pay more. That's fine. I'm not going to bid over it. So, yes, wacky fun. Listen, here's more wacky fun. Joey Castillo is the new drummer for the Circle Jerks. Long had people wondered who was going to be the drummer for the Circle Jerks, because Circle Jerks quite famously have butted heads with many drummers over the years, and they've butted heads with each other over the years. Well, the Circle Jerks are coming back. They were doing a bunch of festival dates, some European dates, some East Coast USA dates, and Joey Castillo is the drummer. I was surprised, because I was going to bet money that it was going to be Dave Lombardo, because Dave Lombardo's been drumming for the Misfits. He's an amazing drummer, but he also has some punk background to a degree, or at least he understands punk. So I thought that was going to be him. But actually, I realized it. Joey Castillo also drummed for Danzig. So mm-hmm. we have the Danzig connection with Joey Castillo and Lombardo. I would have preferred Lombardo just because I think he's a good drummer, an amazing drummer, rather. But Joey Castillo, he's going to do a great job. I'm excited. I don't really care one way or another. As long as it's not like somebody stupid, Joey Castillo is great. He's a good drummer. I think it's going to be cool. Hallie Bullock, Joey Castillo, thumbs up, thumbs down. Where you at?
I know him to be a great drummer. I just, like, I never cared about Queens of the Stone Age. And I didn't see him play with Danzig. So I don't have an opinion, but he seems cool. I'm sure he'll do a great job.
Yeah. Like here's a question. Like, does the drummer for the Circle Jerks even matter that much? So long as it's someone that's competent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And more. Yes. Joey Castillo.
Thumbs up. I looked up live videos of him playing, like, on the drum cam and stuff, and I thought he sounded really good, and he has a lot of energy, and I think he's going to be a good fit with the band. So I think it'll be interesting to, like, see videos of them all playing together, and if they, like, do new music, how it would sound.
In an interview with The Vinyl Guy, which is a pretty good podcast, Keith Morris does an extended interview. And quite sadly, my analysis was correct. And that Off did break up. Keith wasn't 100% clear, but basically it seemed like Mark Rubalcaba didn't like even want to drum in Off anymore. And Stephen mm-hmm. McDonald was kind of spending more time with the Melvins and Red Cross than Off. And it didn't seem like Off was a priority. And he seemed really bummed out by it. So unfortunately, that was sad. Keith is the greatest. In that interview, Keith says – he says, well, why did you have to get the Circle Jerks back together? And Keith's like, because I needed money. You know, Keith is the greatest. Keith is the greatest. Sam, do you care about the Circle Jerks at all or not really?
Not really, but I have seen and do care about the Bronx, so I do think that this is a good thing, since I've probably seen Joey in the Bronx before, and the Bronx is always a damn fun time, so I'm for this.
Sam, what do you think about the fact that in every single promo shot, every single live shot, Keith Morris only has three shirts? His MC5 shirt, his Germ shirt, and his Black Sabbath shirt. What do you think of that? And does that suggest something greater?
I just think he's very consistent with his marketing. So, you know, if that's what he wants to wear with every single photo, then that's cool.
Okay, let's hit one more weighty topic, and then we'll play a song, and we'll come back, and we'll hit Too Easy, and we'll play one more song, and we will shut this bad boy on down. Bite Me Baby have released another video. It's a cover of the Go-Go's Vacation. The Go-Go's, of course, are a fantastic band. No, I'm sorry, covers of Go-Go's Our Lips Are Sealed, rather. And in the video, it's got them, like, kind of roller skating around on the beach and stuff. And yet again, we see, not Natty Ice. Is it Natty Ice that's all over the video?
Smirnoff
Ice, not Natty Ice. And like this is like their fourth video to have like Smirnoff Ice like prominently featured in it. And at first I thought it was like a joke. Because back when I was in college, like getting iced was a thing. Like if you're out and about and your friend like shows you a bottle of Smirnoff Ice, you have to chug it. And like that was funny like a long time ago. And so I thought they were like making fun of that. But now that the Smirnoff Ice bottle – the Smirnoff Ice has been in like so many of their videos repeatedly. I almost wonder, like, maybe this band is being funded by Smirnoff Ice, like for real, you know? But I actually had a minor epiphany about this band, and so I don't know if you guys want to give your views on the video and the band, or if you want me to talk about my minor epiphany.
No, tell us the epiphany.
So here's my minor. So I've been dogging on this band. I mean, I actually think the band sounds kind of good. I think they're too sugary, too cutesy wootsy for me, but that's all right, you know. But what's kind of weird about the band is the singer. She's a great singer. She's much younger than the rest of the guys in the band are like 45. She's like 26 or something. And it's kind of weird because, from my perspective, because all the songs are like, I want to go out with my boy, this boy, but he, you know, I'm too shy to ask. So it's very high school or even middle school type lyrics, a lot of the stuff, you know. And it's like, well, you're a 45-year-old man writing a song about how the cute boy in class won't talk to you. It's like, so that's a little weird, man. You know what I mean? And it would be as weird. Well, actually, if it was all 45-year-old dudes, it would be great. But it's like 45-year-old and it's like this pretty young woman who's cute and is good looking. It's like there's just some weird vibe. I get some weird vibe, and I'm not sure if the weird. Maybe I'm just being weird and like well, it's a little weird, you know. And but you also wonder like, well, is there some kind of marketing behind this band, because they did all of their videos are extremely well produced. They sold a record, but the record was like $40, which other bands that have followed the trajectory, the Chats, Aim on the Sniffers, Regrets, they all kind of had this like same trajectory. So you wonder, is there something going on behind the scenes? And so I've been dogging on this band. And honestly, after this discussion, I'm really not going to mention them too much unless they do something I think is really interesting or something particularly terrible, which I don't think they will. But I don't want to get into a realm where I'm like bullying this band. It's not my thing. Something seems a little off, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't have proof that anything's off. It's just my sixth sense, but maybe my sixth sense is wrong. But here's why I had a minor epiphany. So I'm watching this video. It's got the younger girl or the younger woman and the older dudes that are like 45 singing about boyfriends, right? And then I thought about Surfboard. I love this band, Surfboard. Surfboard is a killer, killer, killer punk band. Surfboard is a band with major money behind them. Their first record was on Colt Records, which is the Julian Casablancas record label, and that means there's major label behind them. But Surfboard is so good, I realize that I'm kind of being manipulated, and I realize they did the house show circuit that all these bands do, then the small venue, then the medium venue, that they all do the exact same venue, so it suggests there's something going on there. That being said, Surfboard's album, which I think that was called Trash World, the album. I'll look it up in a second. Anyway, the only Surfboard's got a ton of 7-inches and singles, but their album was absolutely fantastic. It was punk, it was raw, it was set. It's called Friendship Music is the album. It's absolutely fantastic. But here's the deal with Surfboard. Surfboard, the singer is Danny Miller, who's like, well, so the singer is Danny Miller. She's like 23, and the dudes in the band are like 55, right? And I'm thinking, well, why am I putting the screws on Bite Me Bambi but not Surfboard? It's the exact same thing. It's a band where there's probably more money behind them that's kind of hidden, and it's got old dudes in the back and a young girl in the front. And I'm thinking, well, why don't I feel that way about Surfboard? And the only reason is – well, there's two reasons, and maybe these make a difference. First is – well, there's three reasons. The first is the gap in age is different. You know, Danny Miller's only 23. The dudes in the band are like 55. So there's like a 30-year difference, you know. So with Bite Me Bambi, there's like a 20-year difference, you know. And so maybe there's more creepiness there because maybe you think, well, the guys maybe, you know, where these old grizzled dudes, you know, they're strictly there to kick ass. You know, that's why we're there. The second thing is the music with Surfboard is a lot savager, and the topics are more adult. Presumably they're more adult, you know, about doing drugs, you know, doing meth, doing coke. You know, more dull things than, you know, asking the guy out between gym class or whatever, you know. But the other thing here, and this is probably the real answer, and maybe this is more on me. Maybe I'm falling prey to marketing. Danny Miller, she has like a YouTube show, and she's pretty far out. She's kind of like a modern hippie that also does a lot of drugs and not hippie drugs. And she talked about it. I'm not making this up, you know. So like Danny presents herself as a more world-weary or world-wise person that does crazy shit. And she talks about this on her video show, which honestly I don't necessarily recommend watching because it's just someone hanging out for like 2 hours saying, yeah, I was feeling really dazed the other day, so I went and I smoked some is it that the marketing behind Surfboard is that they're wild and crazy and they've been around the block? Whereas the marketing with Bite Me Bambi is they're young and innocent and just trying to have fun. Like, maybe that's the only real difference, and maybe I'm falling prey to marketing and that's why the alarm's not going off, you know. Or maybe there is, you know, a true difference between these bands. Or maybe one band just has way better music. That being said, I don't want to beat up Bite Me Baby. I think they're fine. I hope they're successful. They seem nice. I just got to stop dogging on them. But my alarm is going off for Bite Me Baby, and it's not for Surfboard. And the question is, well, is it just marketing in that Surfboard are billed as the bad boys and girls, where Bite Me Baby are billed as the nice boys and girls? Is that the only difference?
No, I mean, I don't think it's the marketing. I think I get why you think the one is fine and the other isn't. Like, the Surfboard stuff is like, it is. I liked your word, savager. It's like, it is, I don't know. It's just, it seems like more like music for grown-ups. So if like older dudes want to play that music and they found a younger woman and she wants to make music with older dudes because she likes this music, then that's her prerogative. And like, none of us should really, I don't think, have a problem with that. You're exactly right. There's just something about the like, you know, that the Bite Me Bambi stuff does seem that it is like music for, I don't know, it does seem like it's music for young people. And so then they're, you know, and it is a little bit like childish, right? It's a little bit just, there's something about it that's just a little bit, yeah, like, you can't take it that seriously. It's like, I don't know. So yeah, that it's, then you see like a guy in his 40s in the same hairstyle that he's had since he was like playing in Real Big Fish, like laying on the beach and like doing this sort of like childish, you know, crazy stuff. I don't know. Yeah, it's different. It's totally different to me. It's totally different. And I was like excited because I love Our Lips Are Sealed. I love this song that Bite Me Bambi covered. And like when I went to click on it, I was like, oh, that's like one of my favorite Go-Go songs. Like I got kind of excited to hear it. And then it was like the minute those like ska upstrokes started, I was like, why did you do this to this song? Fuck you. This is a great song. Why did you just do this to this song? It made me like so angry. I don't know. It made me kind of angry. But yeah, I think it's cool, John, that you're like examining your feelings and like making sure that your like judgments are coming from the right place. But I'm just going to say for me, like, I don't, you can't compare these things. Like, one is so awesome and like adults making music for adults, you know, and the other is like a weird, yeah, like kind of Disney-fied thing. Listen, I can't act too good for this. 20 years ago, I was listening to Less Than Jake covering the entire Grease soundtrack and thinking it was like the greatest fucking thing. I'm just like, this is not aimed at me, you know? I don't know. Like, Sam, do you want to put the screws to John? Is he unfairly dogging on Bite Me Bambi?
No, I think he has valid points about the weird marketing happening here because, you know, a lot of things that I guess is presented to us, most of the time gets passed through marketing teams, right? Especially if you're like a bigger band or on a label that has like more money and stuff like that. I am totally with you guys on the fact that, like, you know, I think it's more the content of the music that is like putting all these red flags up for Bite Me Bambi and not Surfboard. I wasn't a fan of really either of them. Bite Me Bambi did have too many horns, which I guess is a thing with the four of us, maybe. Surfboard, I did not like. I'm just letting you know right now because I am the opposite of John with most things.
Yeah, but I feel like you and I agree on core values the most out of anybody.
Yes, I think our morals are in the right place, but when it comes to our musical ears, I like more poppier things than you will ever pick up ever. that wasn't my jam, but it was really it was very chaotic, and I think it is just like you're comparing two polar opposite things, if musically at least. Yeah, I personally think that John, you like Surfboard, so maybe you might be throwing something underneath the, you know, the carpet a little bit. Maybe you're giving them a little bit of excuse. But I don't think that surfboard is as, I guess, it's not as apparent that something weird is happening.
Mm. And more, what do you think?
I agree. Like, Bite Me Bambi has really strange vibes to it.
Yeah, it does.
And, well said, Em.
It's like, because we've talked about them before, and it's like, no, I have to overlook the strangeness, you know? It's like, no, they're okay. Like, I'm just making too big a deal out of something, you know? And now it's like, no, no, I'm not. It's weird. It makes you feel weird, like, in your stomach, almost. So, and I had the same thought as you, John, with the Smirnoff thing. It's like, it's everywhere. Are they sponsored? Like, are they in the pocket of Big Vodka or something? So, like, that was definitely something. And like, I love the surfboard video. I thought it was great, and I love the song, and I'm definitely gonna check out more by them. Like, the surfboard video was like really fun, and it was really engaging, and you know, I think I ended up watching it like through twice, because it was really, really cool. And then the Bite Me Bambi one, it was like, I watched it once, and it's like, it feels like they want to present that they're having fun, but they're trying too hard, but they're trying not to seem like they're trying too hard. And it comes across as like very strained, I think, when it, you know, but they're trying to hide it. The one thing about that though was like the roller skates, they looked really cool. Always wanted to roller skate.
Yeah, the only thing I liked about the Bite Me Bambi was the fact that the singer had a Hello Kitty tattoo.
Yeah.
That was, like, the only thing that I was like, oh, that's cute! And then I was like, did she get that for the kawaii factor, or does she actually like Hello Kitty? Not sure there.
Fair enough. And more, play a track.
All right, so this song, I meant to play it on the podcast a while ago, and, like, other songs just kind of popped in instead. So it's by garage rock duo out of Calgary, Alberta, Misha and the Spanx, and it's called I Want Fire, and it's off their 2021 singles EP.
Get so dark, deeper we go, tunnel vision, for we know it.
Yeah.
And we are back. And the only reason I acted weird is because I didn't know what Kawhi meant. So I had to Google that. Kawhi.
John for a loop.
Kawhi. I'm like, oh my God. Did Sam say something very offensive? And I don't know.
No, I just talk youth.
Yeah. Kawhi. Go ahead.
I am like all of my like cousins and like, you know, like 5-year-old cousins. I'm like their favorite.
You're their favorite.
Yes, I am their favorite. I am.
Well, they've got good taste. What can I say?
Yeah.
Kawaii is the culture of cuteness in Japan. It can refer to items, humans, and non-humans that are charming, vulnerable, shy, and childlike. Thank you. Examples include cute handwriting, certain genres of manga, and characters, including Hello Kitty and Pikachu. Well, there you have it. Well, all right. thank you, Wikipedia. Okay. That's what kawaii means. Okay, listen, let's do two more quickies, and then we will shut this on down. Meet me at the altar. Tell us about it, man.
All right, so they are the next big band in pop punk, for sure. They're, like, doing, like, nostalgic kind of pop punk. So, like, this is really cool. So they formed in 2015, and they formed online. So they did everything online, and they didn't actually, like, meet in person for like years, which I think is just like crazy. It's so cool. So they were just released a video for the acoustic version of their song Feel a Thing, and the acoustic version has Dan Campbell of the Wonder Years featured in it. He has a vocal spot. In the actual version of the song, he is not in it. So what they've been doing is they have an EP coming out soon called Model Citizen, and they release a song from it, like with a video, and the video for Feel a Thing, not the acoustic version, like the electric version, is really cool. It's animated. It's really neat. So like they release that, and then like a couple weeks pass and they release an acoustic version. So, you know, it's like, well, the song translates very well into being acoustic, and everybody in the band's very talented. The lead singer, Edith Johnson, like, has a great voice. So, yeah, I think it's good. I don't really understand why they have a guest spot in the acoustic version of their song, but not in the actual version of their song. But definitely check them out there. They're going places. What did you guys think of them?
I like them. Oh, yeah.
No, go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, I like this. I liked whatever this acoustic version. I did feel like it was super polished, which I don't know how I feel about that yet, so ask me later about that. But yeah, no, I really think that this is a good thing. And I think that, you know, they're doing a good thing here because, you know, again, we need more females in the punk scene.
I have to admit, in the list of things we were covering this week, this was the last one. And so I had time to look at the acoustic version, but then I didn't have time to go look at the original. So it's like hard to, you know, it's hard to appreciate like a new version of a thing that you didn't hear the original version of. But I'm very excited to go check. I'm very excited to go check out more of this band.
Here's something we will all appreciate, surely. Maryland Deathfest have announced their lineup for 2022. Bands playing include Carcass, Obituary, Triumph of Death, which is just basically Tom of Hellhammer doing all Hellhammer with another band because the other guy in Hellhammer is dead. Shrypticon, which of course is just the band that Tom G. Warrior formed after Celtic Frost, after Hellhammer, because the guy in Celtic Frost is now dead. Devilmaster, Coroner, Violence, Hypocrisy, and a whole lot of other bands. And I'm really psyched because Hellhammer, I think, has only done, I mean, not Hellhammer, Triumph of Death, if you will, which is just Hellhammer essentially, has, I think, only done one other USA show. And I am psyched, and this is within driving distance, and I will be there. And also, I've seen Trypticon once. I'm a Celtic Frost maniac. Trypticon is amazing! So I will be there for 2 days, not the whole time, but I'm psyched, and more. The metal event of the season, or what?
I would go to this in a heartbeat if I was near it. Like, it would just be, like, I would be there because I think it would be so good. And I want to go to a metal festival so bad at some point in my life. I almost saw Slayer on their farewell tour, and they had like a bunch of other bands with them, and that was the closest I ever got, but I didn't end up going because one, tickets were really expensive, and two, I couldn't find someone menacing enough to go with. So it was kind of like, oh, you know, you find someone who looks like her, you know, and then it's like, no, I'll be okay. And then it was like, no, you're not going because, you know, there's going to be weird men there. Like, I can take care of myself. I know what I'm doing. But anyway, no, this is great. Like, Carcass would just be like, oh, they'd be so cool. And Triptychon, everything. So two thumbs up.
You've got 1 year to figure this out. You can do it. You can figure out a way to fly down to Baltimore. It's going to be rad. Plus, we can go to Soundgarden Records. Plus, the first time I ever saw Hallie Bullet in person was in Baltimore, although I didn't speak to her because I didn't really know her at that time. I'm like, I think that's Hallie Bullet. And she was walking down the street. But it was her. Hallie Bullet. And Sam, you guys are both going to this, correct?
What was I doing in Baltimore?
There was like some kind of like street party or like festival or something.
Oh, I played with the Ginger Blossoms. That's when I played with the All Redheaded Gin Blossoms cover band.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, right?
Oh yes.
Right? Hamden Fest?
I don't know. I wasn't there for that. I was there for, why was I there? Probably to see like Guar or something.
Oh, wait, are we talking about the same thing? That's the only street, like, festival thing that I did. Okay, anyhow, I'm glad
you saw me. I actually emailed you about this years ago. I will see if I can figure it out. Give me a second.
Nice.
while you two talk
I
about how...
Did, okay, so I occasionally am asked to fill in for the singer of an all redheaded Gin Blossoms cover band called the Ginger Blossoms, and I did play with the Ginger Blossoms at a street festival in Baltimore, and it was like super fucking fun.
And on October 8th, I emailed Hallie Bullet. I said, were you and Chris in Baltimore like 3 weeks ago? I was down there and I thought I saw you, but didn't want to be weird and run up to catch up with you. The irony is that Chris and I could have broed down as I just bought several rare Morsi 7-inches. You responded, that was totally me in Baltimore. I was there for Hamden Fest. What a great fest.
That was it. Yeah, I was singing. So the best thing about that band is that their set is only like maybe like 7 songs long, and they open and close with "Hey Jealousy," which is just fucking like such a master move. It's just like so fucking good.
That is so good. Yeah. Oh my. Yeah, well, John, I'm not going to go to this, so don't find me in Maryland. I couldn't even really figure out what bands were playing because it was all, you know, metal band names that is kind of like a Rorschach to me sometimes, so.
there you have it. Life is a Rorschach, if you will. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. Hallie Bullis, send us out with some sweet tunes.
Okay, yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to play something old that I listened to again like yesterday. It made me super happy. So this is the Humpers, who were, you know, like if you're old like me, you remember put some records out on Epitaph and Sympathy for the Record Industry. And so this is off their 1996 Live Forever or Die Trying Epitaph release. And this is called Wake Up and Lose.